This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. Malaysian equity crowdfunding was introduced in 2016 to provide alternative sources of financing for businesses looking to expand. It certainly seemed to be the solution for some businesses in need of financing during the pandemic. The 2020 Securities Commission annual report revealed that ECF fundraising increased by over 400%. But how accessible is equity crowdfunding for entrepreneurs looking to scale? And do the risks outweigh the rewards for investors? To better understand the mechanics of crowdfunding, I'm speaking to Elaine Lokman, CEO and co-founder of Atta Plus, one of the pioneer players in the space. Good morning, Elaine. Good to have you back on The Breakfast Grill.
Morning, Shazana. Thank you for having me.
So on the surface, the global pandemic surprisingly didn't dampen ECF activity in Malaysia. Is this figure misleading, though? Was this ultimately down to the My Co-Investment Fund scheme launched by the Securities Commission under Budget 2019?
Well, actually, to tell you honestly, when the pandemic hit us, the ECF operators were very, very concerned. Yeah, because we knew that the hardest hit would be the SME community. And as it stood then, or even until today, right, the SME community are the ones that finds it very challenging to access to funds, right? So what we did was also talk to the SC to look at how SC could work together with us and support SMEs during the pandemic. Obviously, the MySafe Fund definitely supported the fundraising during those periods. So between April to end of last year, SC made it very accessible for SMEs in terms of those who are fundraising via ECF to get a more attractive matching ratio. But having said that, you pointed out correctly whether was that the main reason. But actually, when we look at across the world, in terms of how the capital markets instruments were performing, you can simply just look at Bursa or even the bursas around the world. All the counters were doing really well, including the bad counters. Yeah, and I think generally across the board, people were just looking at what instruments can they invest in, and that included equity crowdfunding. And honestly speaking, when we looked at the issuers and the number of investors, it was pretty remarkable. It was not just a small investor pool. It was actually in the larger numbers of investors. And what we could see was a lot more retail participation, including more baby boomers coming into the fore to look into this asset class as potentially an attractive capital market instrument for them to generate income and create wealth.
Okay, so the pandemic did seem to spur appetites for this alternative form of investment. Was Atta Plus a beneficiary of this? How much was raised through your platform during the pandemic, if you could share?
Yeah, okay. It was one of our best years, actually. Last year, we raised close to 40 million, in total.
Ringgit.
In terms of, ringgit, to assist businesses, to fundraise on the platform. And this year, we see similar trends. And it's just across the board, not just us, I believe. Towards the end of the year is the busiest. I don't know, for some reason, SMEs tend to look at fundraising in the third and fourth quarter, But we see a similar trend also because the SC has continued to liberalise as well the framework and guidelines to further support the SME ecosystem and also businesses to fundraise via this alternative infrastructure. And so if you look at liberalization of the guidelines, it's from the limits of fundraising. When SC actually approved ECF, initially it started out with 5 million maximum, and there was an annual cap as well at 3 million. Last year, it was raised up to 10 million. And then now, I think it was announced in, if I'm not mistaken, in March or April, it was further raised up to 20 million max now. And even the business structures are also different. So initially, it was only private limited or Sdn Bhd was eligible. And now, limited liability partnerships as well as unlisted public companies
okay.
Are also eligible to fundraise via this method.
And we last spoke to you in 2017. And Ataplus is, of course, one of the pioneer platforms. The landscape has changed since then. There have been other players joining the fray. Where does Ataplus rank among the competition?
So it's good competition. Any competition is healthy, so that, you know, we will keep on our toes and continuously innovate, and as well as to provide good quality services for our customers. So I'm proud to say today, you know, through all our hard work as well, and I would like to commend my team and co-founders for this, that I would like to think that we are a strong number two in the market. And we do feel that we bring significant value to the customers, especially in terms of marketing and promoting campaigns. Yeah, because we pay a lot of emphasis on marketing, be it PR, digital social media marketing, or even our pitching sessions. And it's great to inform people out there is that the pandemic has actually made a lot more people more aware of equity crowdfunding, mm-hmm. Especially as we are doing right now, you know, working from home, and people are more comfortable with digital or online engagements. Having said that, you know, that has contributed much more positively in terms of our pitching sessions, because it used to be more of face-to-face. But because of the pandemic, so we are even reaching out to those people, you know, beyond borders, across the states and across the world. We actually, you know, think it's a great thing. And for Adas Plus, basically, we had definitely benefited from that. And we're looking forward to provide a greater value in terms of more products and services that can complement whatever that we are providing today, just merely or equity crowdfunding. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. I guess Ataplus has been able to adapt to the limitations that the pandemic posed and in a way broadened the reach. Let's walk through the process of equity crowdfunding and Ataplus's record since the platform was launched in 2016. How many applications have been received and actually passed the two-stage screening process in the beginning to be able to be listed for funds?
There's many. What I would say, I can give you a percentage. Generally, right, when companies come through our platform, I would say easily, because a lot of them get stuck at two things that we normally see, the business plan, and more so the financial projections, you know, and then they drop off. Yeah. So I can easily say, you know, about 30%.
30% make it to listing.
Yeah, 30% make it to listing. Yeah, even then, you know, we do work closely with them to make sure that the content is super solid, you know, it is of quality. And then as we make it transparent, and also the content and whatever documentation information available, yeah, to the public.
So how many out of that 30% actually go on to achieve the full funding? How many, you know, get what they want when they sign up to Ataplus?
Yeah, so we work a bit differently from our, I would say, counterparts, because what we've observed is that in all our counterparts platform, they're all 100% fully funded, you know. So from our side, it's easily about more than 60%. Yeah, but then we have adopted also clear strategies moving forward because previously there are issuers, you know, who has this misconception about fundraising, you know, so especially on crowdfunding, they used to think, oh, you know, we'll just list our campaign and miraculously the money just appears, you know, so it doesn't happen that way because the issuers themselves would have to work really, really hard. So, and now we do not recommend any issuer to actually open their fundraising with zero fundraise, because it's more, you know, you need to look at the psyche of investors out there, and they're all waiting for, oh, who's going to be the first one to invest, right? So now whenever we open a campaign, an issuer needs to actually already fundraise about at least 20% of their minimum target. Yeah, and then they can actually, you know, prop up, yeah, and max out their marketing activities the moment the campaign goes live. And mm-hmm. we work together with them closely on that. Mm.
Would you say that as a platform operator, there is a kind of inherent conflict in your role? Because you do want as many entrepreneurs to list, but you're also supposed to ensure a robust vetting process. So how do you, you know, how do you resolve these kind of conflicting aims?
Yeah, and we actually realized it, you know, at a very early stage of our business. Yeah, I can tell you honestly, when we started, we were doing so much. I think more, a lot of in-depth. It's almost like to a level of an you know, venture capital or investment banking. Then we took a step back and say, oh, hang on, you know, it just doesn't make sense looking at our business model. But you know, although we recognize that, but we will not compromise certain things, yeah? So we do a screening or due diligence to a certain in-depth level. However, moving forward, it is an issue of scaling and scalability, because if we continue to operate the way we operate right now, it is not scalable. So we are putting in place, I would say, strategies. And when we talk about strategies, it's not just a business strategy, but also a tech strategy to ensure that moving forward, the platform will be scalable so that we can accept a lot more numbers, volume of entrepreneurs to come on and apply on a platform and also list, but at the same time, not compromising the compliance requirements that's been set out by SE. Mm-hmm. So
so you're not there yet. You're still working on like what that balance looks like?
We do know. We already have put in place the plans. It's just a matter of operationalizing that and translating that, especially on the tech side, because that's quite sophisticated, you know. So there will be AI as well as a lot of machine learning capabilities that will be incorporated onto the platform to address these matters. Yeah.
I'm speaking to Elaine Lokman, CEO and co-founder of Atta Plus. After the break, equity crowdfunding from the investor's point of view, and is our regulatory environment conducive for ECF? We'll discuss. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. We're taking stock of the equity crowdfunding scene with Elaine Lokman, CEO and co-founder of Atta Plus. The earlier part of our discussion focused on the entrepreneur's perspective in the ECF process. So looking at the other side of the equation, the investors, you know, what is the type and demographic of investors on your platform that you see?
Okay, so our demographic is pretty much similar to what you see that's being reported by the SE. So majority are still retail investors, about 75% are retail. Majority are still Malaysian. For us, about 93% are Malaysian and 7% are international investors. In terms of the breakdown between male and female, males about 70%. So obviously we'd like to see more female participation, yeah, to invest in on equity crowdfunding. But we do notice a trend whereby female investors do tend to support female entrepreneurs. And in terms of age group, a lot of the younger people tend to like this asset class. You know, when we first started, I can say that 70% were millennials. Yeah, because I think the younger generation, they're a lot more, inquisitive, and they understand more. And I think if you look at even the younger investors who are investing in robo-advisors or even cryptocurrencies, you know, it tends to be the younger people because they tend to be higher risk takers, or they understand it, or they find that it's more exciting, you know, to them. Yeah.
Okay. So it really targets, I guess, younger, savvy investors. At the same time, it isn't for everyone. And it's something that you explicitly state in your website. It's not for everyone. You've also said in previous interviews that, you know, the onus is really on investors to conduct due diligence, given the fact that there's only a certain level of vetting that the platform can do. I don't know. Is there enough being done to make sure that investors are aware of what they're getting into and the risks involved?
So, you know, I think what our observation has been over the years is that, number one, we do really encourage people to know and understand what they invest in. And it's always been in all our communication, whenever we do briefings for be it investors or issuers, do understand what you're investing in anything. It's not just equity crowdfunding, yeah? So that's number one. Number two, also, what equity crowdfunding actually offers is for you to diversify your investment, okay? And you can actually invest in smaller amounts. So that's the beauty of it. And, you know, in Malaysia, the smallest amount that we have accepted to date is 10 ringgit. It is so inclusive, right? So, you know, the issuer, it really depends on the issuer. You know, what is their strategy? Is their strategy to get many, many, many retail investors to support them? So then they can push down the investment entry point to a much smaller denomination. So we've had issuers that offers 500 ringgit, 200, 1,000, anything below 5,000. Yeah. So which is highly, highly accessible to any investors. But coming back to the risk, again, I would like to say, okay, do spread your or diversify your investments and do read about what you are investing in. Very, very important. And thirdly, do engage with your with the companies that you have invested in to find out how they're doing. And typically, you know, as we speak right now, we find that, you know, the companies do engage with their investors, you know, to update them, to let them know whether it's good or bad. And if it's bad, you know, how do they then address the challenges to make it good again?
Mm-hmm. Have you seen investors burned on your platform?
At the moment, no.
Mm. And so then since 2016, how many have been successfully monetized, and, you know, what have the average returns been?
Okay, very good question. So I'm proud to say that the first company that successfully crowdfunded on our platform, which is Kola Fund, they were also the first company that gave an exit to all their shareholders. Yeah, so they were totally acquired. And Kola Fund being also a social enterprise and impact business, so they didn't give that much return, but I guess it was a balance between the social return and also the investment return. So they gave all the shareholders, they made a 10% return. Yeah, so after 3 years, which is not too bad for a social enterprise. But the rest at that time, because only ordinary share structure was made available. So there are still ongoing concerns. So no exits as yet. But moving on, I think at beginning of since last year, the Securities Commission already allowed for the preference share structure to take effect. So we do see some issuers already giving out some returns, you know, in the interim. So what the exact returns are, you know, I do not know, honestly. Yeah. But because that is made available, you find that a lot more businesses are interested to look at equity crowdfunding as a fundraising platform, not just because of the 10 million or 20 million fundraising amount that has been raised, but also because of the share structure that's available right now. You know, it makes it more attractive for them to look at more innovative preference structure that they can offer to investors.
So in terms of government policy and initiatives, what do you think needs to be done to make ECF more mainstream for investors? We had the Third Capital Markets Master Plan launched recently. I mean, is there something there that can be gleaned in terms of what can be done to encourage alternative financing?
Yeah. So that was interesting, you know, looking at the Capital Markets Master Plan. I believe that specific to whether you're looking at incentive, I think MySafe is already there. It is working. So we do hope, yeah, the government will continue to support this and channel funds to MySafe for Budget 2022 as an industry and association of ECF and P2P. We have submitted our proposal to the government on that point. And also looking at if they can look into supporting also specific verticals like the impact businesses, women-led businesses, as well as companies, you know, who are into ESG.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is we're looking forward to is the implementation of the 50% tax relief for investors, which has yet to be effected. And that was actually announced for Budget 2021. Once that comes into effect, it will really spur, yeah, the retail participation for the investor side. Yeah. Now, moving on, I think if you look at some of the things that's mentioned in the paper that was presented, one is potentially the introduction of new capital markets instrument, like simple agreements for future equities, safes, especially for very, very early stage companies. So if you're looking at how the SC is supporting this, right? So they are looking at various stages of the business growth from the very early stage. And then when they start liberalizing to open up to LLPs as well as unlisted PLCs, that's one. And number two is also pushing up the maximum limit to 20 million. It actually opens up to larger types of SMEs to look into alternative funding channels. Yeah, because prior to that, when you talk about 5 million, a lot of the SMEs were like, oh, this is too small for us. Yeah, so you might as well look at other capital markets instruments, you know, but now since it's been pushed to 20 million, so hey, hang on here, you know, rather than going to, say, lead market, I might as well look at another alternative funding channel, you know, which is much more cost effective, and also looking at how we can comply to the requirements and get access, but at the same time, we can also gain other things like marketing and brand visibility, for that matter, right? So, and with the announcement of a simple agreements for future equities for safes, you can see that the government is actually looking at, hey, you know, we want to also support the very, very young company. Okay, so they're looking at the whole value chain of or the growth, the whole entire growth process of a SME, and see how we can support with alternative funding.
So there's actually quite a few things from the master plan that could help make the ECF scene more vibrant. But enlarging that share of money would also mean that ATA Plus 2 needs to grow in order to be able to support all that funding that could come in. So I want to end with a question on, I guess, what your growth plans are for the future. Last year, Green Pro Capital Corp, which is NASDAQ listed, took a 15% stake in ATA Plus. So, you know, can you share the value of the stake and what are the ultimate aims of this partnership moving forward?
Okay, so with Green Pro as our strategic partner, really, so we are looking at really growing the business beyond Malaysia, and specific to ATA Plus, equity crowdfunding is just one product that we're looking at. So our objectives has always been looking at how can we offer more inclusive financial products, as well as how we can also look into not just serving business owners, but also offering opportunities for especially retail investors to actively participate. So for us, moving on is regional growth, in specific regulated jurisdiction. Yes, that's number one. Number two, also in terms of providing other value-added services that can further support entrepreneurs currently, of course, within the ECF realm. And moving on, if we do have other supporting or other types of financial products that can add value to especially entrepreneurs, we are seriously looking at that. What those are, I can't reveal at the moment, Shazana. But hopefully in the next few months, we do have aspiration to one day go for listing. So that is in our roadmap.
In the next few months? Did you say, because you mentioned months? Is that soon?
Well, I would say in the next 6 months, perhaps. Yeah, it is in our roadmap. And because we do have shareholders and we do want to give, you know, value and return to our shareholders. And with the listing exercise, I know we hope that we can grow bigger and at the end of the day, meet our objectives of, you know, helping more entrepreneurs, but at the same time, you know, how to get globally, you know, people involved, you know, in all these exciting new businesses.
All right, Elaine, looks like we'll have much more to talk about in the coming months. You know, thank you so much for speaking with me. Looking forward to the next chat.
Thank you, Shazana. Thank you.
I've been speaking to Elaine Lokman, CEO and co-founder of ATA Plus. This has been The Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.